Welcome to another Domestic Preparedness podcast interview. Today's topic, nuclear preparedness. Is the United States ready? Moderating the discussion is Craig Diatley, who is the director of the Institute for Public Health Emergency Readiness at the MedStar Washington Hospital Center in Washington, D.C. Today's podcast is sponsored by FLIR Systems, a global leader in the design, manufacture, and marketing of thermal imaging and radars, advanced CBRNE detection solutions, and state-of-the-art surveillance and detection sensors. To learn more, visit www.flir.com. Now, here's Craig.
Hi. In 2009, the History Channel created a documentary entitled Day After Disaster, to address the scenario of a suitcase nuclear detonation in a major metropolitan city. In April 9, 2014, I revisited the topic in an article which was followed by a domestic preparedness poll to help review the preparedness level of the nation for such an attack if it were to occur today. The following panel discussion brings together subject matter experts, including three from the 2009 documentary, to address the gaps as well as the progress in nuclear preparedness over the past 5 years. Joining me today are Dr. James Augustine, who is the emergency physician and clinical associate professor of the Department of Emergency Medicine at Ohio's Wright State University, Chief Lynn Miller, who is the emergency management coordinator at the City of Winchester in Virginia, Chief Lawrence Schultz, who is the fire service instructor at Traditions Training and former Assistant Chief of the District of Columbia Fire and EMS Department. And finally, Dr. Craig Vanderwagen, who is a senior partner at the Martin Blanc and Associates and former Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Now let's begin.
Well, gentlemen, as you all are aware, I did write an article for a recent edition of Domestic Preparedness that did speak to a History Channel video that I had seen and I thought was relevant to trying to put into perspective where are we in 2014 relative to preparedness, at least from a healthcare system perspective, for a suitcase nuke. And I'm curious, in your respective opinions, are we better in 2014 for this type of unique and tragic situation compared to what they presented back then that you all were a part of?
I think that if we compare 2014 to 2009, there is some objective evidence that we've improved somewhat significantly in certain areas. Specifically, the National Health Security Preparedness Index, which was completed last year, and looking at 120 or so different measurable metrics, reported that, in fact, we had improved in the area of handling medical logistics, that is, handling the material that we would need to move from the stockpile to the ground level. We've improved in terms of communication and coordination between the relevant jurisdictions. And the areas that we still have difficulty with are in medical surge and in community engagement, and both of those areas will need continued effort if we are to show further significant improvement in the process. So I think that we have improved in those areas, but there's still a long way to go yet.
Other comments?
I would concur that there has been some improvement in the coordination, particularly in the metropolitan areas where the epicenter may be located. However, as you get away from that epicenter and you get out more to neighboring jurisdictions, 50, 60 miles away from that epicenter, I'm not certain that there has been a great deal of improvement, particularly looking at it from a surge capacity into those areas in relationship to medical care, and carry that a little bit further, even looking at it from a perspective of evacuation and being in the ability to deal with those evacuees, which will be in masses that will enter into the areas away from the epicenter in the metropolitan area.
I'll follow up with that and say that really the focus of healthcare system preparedness needs to be in the rural areas, because essentially any event that would occur, the resulting wave of victims would all be moving away from the major cities. A long time ago, the federal government participated in funding rural health care through the Hill-Burton plan, and I honestly believe it is time for Hill-Burton 2 to occur to improve emergency system capability, particularly around scenarios which we're ill prepared for, including burn mass casualty incidents. Because of our success in preventing burns, we have little burn preparedness surge capacity left, and radiation. And after the Japanese nuclear event a couple years ago, even though it wasn't a bomb, it clearly laid out the need for nuclear preparedness.
Would you all agree that the improvements that have been noted have been as much for any and all types of situations as opposed to being central to trying to improve the country's nuclear response capability or not?
And I'll start this one by saying, because of our efforts to do all hazard preparedness, we're much better prepared for a nuclear event. Our last several years have seen us have to prepare for everything from blackouts, infectious disease, the nuclear event in Japan, a number of weather events. I think all of these prepare coordination both at the regional and at the national level. And all of those efforts help us in preparing for a really unknown event like a nuclear detonation.
Anybody else want to comment?
I would agree that the all hazards approach has been the reason we've made movement forward. And without that all hazards approach, I don't know that we would have made significant improvement in the nuclear area.
And my follow-up to that question would simply be, with our improving our all hazards response capability, particularly in the metropolitan areas, then what do you see as the current gaps that we should focus on in order to be better prepared for this unique situation?
I would go back to one of the previous comments in relationship from a medical care perspective, that it needs to reach out to the rural communities or suburban communities away from the epicenter. As depicted in the film and in the article, the epicenter, there's going to be total destruction. And without reaching out past those areas, I think we have a big gap in being able to deal with the outcome.
I would agree with that. I would take it to the notion that one of the areas that needs strengthening is the idea that we have to function with regional capability in mind, as opposed to simply thinking about it as a pinpointed location, if you will. One of the things that we have observed in the last few years in conducting regional discussions, et cetera, is that the ability to utilize tools that were provided in the days when we had pretty strong federal funding support, with that funding diminishing, the need for regional approaches that would encompass the outlying areas more effectively is a policy matter that I think FEMA and HHS and DHS have begun to embrace, but they need to expand and strengthen that commitment to a regional notion of coordination and development.
I was going to add, the survey done by the Domestic Preparedness Group indicates that the members feel the two weakest areas are in evacuation and in health system readiness, training, and capability to manage multiple victims. So if we were to look at major gaps and relate them to what our members believe, those are the two focus areas. We have to prepare a health system, even though we're going through major changes in the health system itself. We have to be prepared to close the gap for major incident preparedness, even as many of our systems are running up against their capabilities on a day-to-day basis.
Jim, you mentioned the importance of evacuation planning, but in particular, that evacuation planning needing to address burn patients. Any comments about the nation's ability to handle mass burn problems at this point in time, or where we where we need to be?
Craig, I believe that's a big issue. Again, this is an issue of success. We have prevented burns, and Chief Schult and his fire preparedness, fire prevention role, and everyone like him around this country has dramatically reduced burn injuries, and therefore our burn units shrunk or disappeared. Many times, even for routine day-to-day events, we need to go multi-state to capture enough resources to care for patients. The biggest burn event recently was the Rhode Island nightclub fire and then the Savannah sugar refinery fire, which required integration of multiple states' resources. In a radiologic, a nuclear detonation event, the majority of people who have survivable wounds will require extensive burn care, and our ability to assure that is really questionable at this point. And we would have to commit significant resources to prepare what are essentially satellite units that on a day-to-day basis are doing something else, but in the event of a big operation. And then Larry Schult would be required to put together the teams that would begin to evacuate people, and despite having to take care of events around a detonation, they would have to be prepared to both evacuate new victims and then, frankly, evacuate existing people that are in hospitals. What a huge challenge that would be.
It would not be a good period of time, that's for sure. Anybody else want to speak to the burn patient issue before I move us on?
Just to recap what Doc Augustine said, we would, during a couple of our planning scenarios with the national security events going on in D.C., we would inadvertently kind of throw a scenario out there, the what-if. And the burn patients were always the big what-if for us because the capacity in the National Capital Region is limited. And then beginning to see where else we would go. And we would come up with a list of burn centers outside of the National Capital Region, and then became the process of how do you get the people there. So it's a great question. I think it still continues to be a significant issue. And the logistics of making all that happen is going to be a task, to say the least.
I certainly would agree with that evaluation. And in the context of the District of Columbia, we have written a new, both for the city as well as the National Capital Region burn plan, that uses the resources of the Northeastern and the Southeastern Burn Consortium to help us find beds. But burn patients would be but one part of the problem involving evacuation. I'm curious, what's your response and advice in terms of what about kids? What are we going to do with all the kids that can't be managed within a local community?
And the pediatric population, of course, is an area that over the last 2 or 3 years has started to get a stronger focus, both in terms of the availability of appropriate pediatric dosages of any prophylactic or treatment medications that we might want to use in that population, but certainly the notion of pediatric specialized beds is a difficult one. But again, the idea of a regionalized approach has real merit, and even in Hurricane Katrina, we saw effective use of the pediatric hospital communication linkages in terms of the ability to transport pediatric patients who had unique problems. And I'm talking about pediatric oncology and a few other specialized requirements that can only be dealt with in a pediatric hospital context. And that was facilitated somewhat by the National Institute of Child Health. And I think that notion of strong communication and pre-planning through those pediatric hospital collaboratives is going to be where we're going to see the strongest ability to respond to the hospital needs of pediatric patients especially.
Okay. Any other comments about how we would deal with the pediatric population that needed to be cared for?
What a dreadful thing we'll have to prepare for, because there'll be a lot of orphaned children. I do believe the healthcare would be coordinated through a very strong group of children's hospitals that we have in this nation. The real issue will be how state protective services and our school systems would have to come up immediately to deal with children who have been separated from parents and would require a lot of social support to take care of. Communities would have to rally around the needs of both the adults, but particularly for the child victims of this, and for the orphaned children and for the orphaned and injured children.
Any other observations or comments before I move us to the last question?
Frank, I wanted to raise one more issue before we try to deal
with
that.
Go ahead.
The question of what have we done to develop appropriate treatments or preventives for acute radiation sickness is an area where we clearly could use continued improvement. Currently, we have CGSF products that have migrated from the oncology market space into the stockpile. But, of course, those require extensive supportive care and patient education for their full use, and they don't deal with the stressors beyond low-level radiation exposures, low-level being 1 to 2 grays. And that is still an issue that remains open in terms of our ability to provide people with either effective in-depth treatment for acute radiation sickness or to offer a preventive that may mitigate that exposure where they've had exposures up to 6 grays or so. And that area will need continued work if we're going to provide better protection to the population through those means. I just wanted to make that comment before we moved on to that.
Yeah, no, that's appropriate and another planning and response consideration alike. Great, thank you.
Yeah.
How about my last question? That has to do with public information, public messaging. Mm-hmm. Should we be doing something now to prepare the public versus what's our game plan if this event were to really happen, not just for the impacted area, but what would you imagine issues being for the rest of the country?
I know in the region, 2008, 2009, there was a lot of effort put into pre-scripted messaging for all the scenarios. And I think that's hugely important. One of the notes that I got down here is a key concern is just the question you said, and that is, are we being preemptive enough in messaging? Because as you would know, poor messaging ahead of time could lead to just a significant increase in people asking for, desiring services from the hospitals and the other government entities for services that they may or may not need based on what they think their exposure is or what their problems are. So if you have poor messaging, that's going to equate on the back end to a significant increase in people needing other things that they probably or maybe wouldn't need if the messaging was set up front, kind of continuous, putting the message in people's heads as to what they can expect, you know, what kind of like the different action levels might be. So I think the idea of pre-scripting messages was good, but to think that when an event occurs, we're going to go to those messages, we, you know, can kind of expect some problems with radios and television and things like that. So that may not be the most effective way to use the messaging during the event as opposed to pre-event type messaging.
So not only are we going to have the right message at the right time, but we're going to have to potentially revise the strategy that we are used to employing to get the message out.
Yeah, you could imagine the surge of people coming to the hospital that maybe wouldn't have needed to if, again, that message was preemptive.
Yeah. Other comments, observations, suggestions?
Well, again, the pre-messaging, I think, would be extremely important. And I think political leadership, in addition to the incident commanders, will need to know what the options are in their CONOPs as they develop their messages before the event. The other thing, of course, that would be helpful would be if we had better ability to assess people's actual radiation exposure to reassure them. And if we could advise them of that, that would be the more ideal circumstance. And again, this goes to the notion of what are we investing in ahead of time to provide these kinds of tools that will mitigate people's anxiety vis-a-vis the event.
Well taken. All right. Sounds like we're okay. Gentlemen, it was a pleasure. We did a lot in a little period of time. Hopefully we'll never have to do this for real.